T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Dan McNeil, Danny Parkins.
Oh, here we go!
Afternoons on the Score.
I have a level of excitement for The Last Dance on Sunday that is similar to approaching like a big sporting event.
You're excited? Feel these nipples.
This is something that has the potential, at least from all the teasing of it, to be substantive. It's the last important era in Bulls basketball, at least the last successful era in Bulls basketball, and it will take us to a time. All I want is to go back in time and remember what it was like to be on the road with that team.
Hey, Tone, you okay?
Yeah. It's your day. You're being kind of quiet.
Well, that's because, remember when is the lowest form of conversation.
Before Michael Jordan got to the Bulls in 1984, drugs were prevalent. Cocaine and recreational drugs of all types.
Yeah, you got your lines over here, you got your weed smokers over here, you got your women over here.
My expectations honestly could not be higher, and I will be shocked if it doesn't live up to my high expectations.
Okay.
I dislike the Founding Fathers immensely. They're a weird group of guys. I hate when people are like, God has never created such a great group of men as the Founding Fathers. Yeah, the 92 Bulls. The 92 Bulls were better than the Founding Fathers. The 96 Bulls, maybe. That's actually a perfect metaphor for the United States. When I was a boy, the United States was like Michael Jordan in 1992. And now, the United States is like Michael Jordan now.
Yo! Saddle up! Lock and load!
The McNeil and Parkin Show, afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
Yeah, let's do this. Happy Scorantine Day 21. The next documentary will be on the Bulls traveling cocaine circus of the early 80s, Mac.
Coke to my left, weed to my right. Women in the middle, yeah, all kinds of options. That was so much a part of American culture in the 80s and a part of last night's festivities in episodes 1 and 2, the cocaine circus. And MJ contending that was the first time in his life he'd seen it. Okay, I can believe that. I don't think it was the last time he saw it, even though he said he left the room because he realized how many people might wind up in the stripy hole with that when the entire team was there, he said, basically.
You got your lines over here, you got your weed smokers over here, you got your women over here.
Luke, Ron Hopper. Oh, yes. Steelers wheel, ladies and gentlemen.
It's just so ridiculous, like, knowing what we know about how Jordan evolved into just this, like, degenerate gambler and drinker who was, you know, so incredibly competitive. He was just totally turned off by the partying at the beginning. And then we're watching him do this interview for the documentary with a bottle of scotch and multiple cigars next to him. And, like, depending on which answer you're seeing, the glass of scotch is just, like, at a different level of, yes, you know, depth within the glass. So, like, Clean living, Michael Jordan, okay.
Yeah, I noticed on one occasion he had let it sit for quite some time, and because the ice had begun to melt and just form a big layer of water on the top third of his beverage. I'm like, Mike, have a sip of your scotch, man. You're losing all of the ice, which although some people like to let the ice melt a little bit, water it down a little bit, it opens up the flavor of a good scotch, I'm told. I like things as quickly as possible. I like it not neat, but I don't want the ice melting completely on any fine distillate, Danny.
And maybe he wasn't even drinking it, and maybe that's why the levels of the glass changed depending on the shot, because he just let the ice melt, and he just wanted to have some scotch in the shot.
Which security also blanket?
It's nice to have it here. And so when I'm talking to you guys about, like, I didn't even drink then, and I was just on the straight and narrow, but don't worry, that's not the case now, as you see me in my palatial mansion with all of these things next to me. It was... Man, it felt good to have something that felt like a live sporting event again. Like, with regards to the documentary and the details and the feelings that it elicited, we will get into it over the course of the entire show. 312-644-6767, Sam Smith at 3, Ed Obradovich on the anniversary of Doug Buffon's passing at 4, and Rusty LaRue at 5 o'clock. But... Mac, I'm hearing that game did about an NFL game's worth of ratings in Chicago. Massive numbers here. Not a Bears game where, 25-27% of the city is watching, but, like Cowboys, Giants, 325 on Fox, that type of rating in Chicago, which is absolutely massive. It felt good to, all right, 8 o'clock in front of a TV, big Chicago sporting event, relevant around the country, let's go. It felt very therapeutic for me.
Yeah, it's because what's it been, 5 weeks since there's been a sporting event played? I mean, a team sporting event. It's been some time. So sure, having something to put on the calendar and look forward to it, as you and a lot of other people did, I'm surprised to hear it's garnering that big of an audience. I thought it would do very well, but I didn't think it would do... Sunday afternoon NFL numbers, because those numbers are incredible. I mean, they're just in a league of their own to really the NFL has been for a number of years in major markets.
It's not doing that in New York and Philly and Boston and Indianapolis.
Right.
But
I know.
In Chicago, yeah. It's doing that type of number,
yeah,
which
that's...
It's
still a bit lofty. I didn't think it would get that high, though. That just proves that people are as starved as you've been, and casual fans and diehards alike have something in this series. I thought the first two episodes were very, very good. I'm enticed for more. We talked late last week about Jordan's concern that he was going to come across looking like an a-hole. I think a couple of them did last night.
Yes, there were not a lot of punches pulled. I've been told that it was also, the most boring or dull of all of the episodes, right? It's introducing the characters and it's setting the scene. So we'll see if it lives up to that. But I was thoroughly entertained. And who came off the worst to you, if you're saying multiple people did? Because I know what elicited the strongest feelings for me, but who came off the worst to you?
Scottie Pippen. I thought Pippen's treatment of Krause, and Phil Jackson, by the way, for tolerating it as long as he did, because he didn't like Krause as well. And Jerry doesn't come across as a likable guy. I thought he, I had a completely different relationship with him than other people did. I didn't have to work with him, and it wasn't an easy thing. But it's apparent, and I would have loved some of their teammates to be a little bit more vivid and not sanitize the language on how rough they were verbally with Jerry Krause. Wennington talked about it. Several guys talked about it, including Phil Jackson. I'd love to know just how far they took it. How personal was that criticism? And then they at least covered the part of the story I remember at the time when Reinsdorf had warned Pippen not to take a long-term contract for security reasons that he wouldn't be happy, but he offers it to him. Anyway, he refused to be a little bit more generous about it. Pippin takes the deal because he feels his family need the money and then holds a grudge for a number of years and then postpones surgery until right before the season begins. And Jordan lit him up for that. And not the first player in town to do that. But that's a middle finger that is supposed to be at management and went to every one of his teammates and Bulls fans along the way from Pippen. That's my take on Pippen last night.
Yeah, he clearly did not handle the surgery in a professional or admirable way. The contract, he signed it for a reason. He felt like he needed the security, as you mentioned, for his family. He comes from a huge family. There's health problems with his brother and his father, and comes from a lot of poverty. And he signs a bad deal. And by the way, Michael Jordan signed a bad deal for too long. Like, they didn't know that the NBA was going to explode in terms of popularity, revenue, television ratings, and all of those things. And so they both were underpaid for a long time. Jordan was just underpaid for less with the Bulls. But I didn't remember that he was the 122nd highest paid player in the league. Yeah. And it's fascinating that he still made more from basketball than Michael Jordan did. He just got it from the Rockets and the Blazers and then a little bit from the Bulls on the back end. But Scottie Pippen still made over $109 million in his NBA career. So you can't let him off the hook for no tip in Pippen. He made plenty of money on the basketball floor.
Yeah, he sure did. And I know time has a way of softening people's toughest stances. And you just reference what he, you know, invariably is linked to Pippen, and that is the way he treated people, no tip in Pippen. He just has never been a very warm and fuzzy guy, quite the opposite. He's been difficult to deal with, but Bulls fans seem to have forgotten about that. I don't know if this documentary is going to change the way they look at him. Probably not. Not very many. But of the guys who were painted in a bad light last night, and there was a little on Jordan, I thought a little on Kraus, some on Reinsdorf. More than anybody, I thought Pippen. Pippen took the biggest PR hit, I thought, in the first two, collectively.
See, the thing that elicited the strongest feelings for me was still the stuff about Jerry Kraus. And you can know the story, but to be reminded of it in those details, and then just from my own experience last night, watching it with my wife who didn't know the story, it was fascinating because she was asking the most basic and obvious question that is honestly the correct takeaway, which was, wait, what? Why didn't they want to keep Michael Jordan and everyone together after they won a championship?
Right, I know.
Right? Like, it is crazy that after he won and they won in 97 and they beat Utah for the first time and they won their fifth title, it was already so known and so public that at that press conference, Jordan is being asked if they will get a chance to run it back for a sixth. And then after, Jerry Reinsdorf has to step in to negotiate directly with Phil Jackson, that they get the chance to run it back for a sixth. Kraus comes out, and this is the last time Phil's going to be the coach. Phil says, I was told if I go 82-0 and win a championship, we're not getting it back. Like, talk about something that has aged horribly and makes no sense. Like, Joe Flacco wins a Super Bowl on a great run, and he gets $110 million after it. Because if you have a shot to win a title, like, you are immortalized and you are rewarded. Like,
Bulls win five and get shown the door.
Yeah, Bulls win five, and they're like, well, you know, Jerry Kraus is getting some credit, but not enough, so only one more, and then we have to go to Tim Floyd and Eddie Curry. Like, it is so ludicrous to see that whole thing happen again. And now, obviously, there's a lockout after it, and who knows what would have happened. And his evaluation of Pippen having peaked was probably accurate, but who cares? You still run it back for a championship. It's just wild that Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner of the team, who stepped in to negotiate directly with Phil Jackson, didn't step in after they won a third title in 97-98 and say, what are we doing? Yeah. We're going to force Michael Jordan into retirement and break this thing up? That it's as crazy today as it was then.
It's, yes, he places his friendship with Jerry Krause and what Krause meant to him above what those athletes did. And for them to make public declarations before the year began, like they were proud of it. This is Phil Jackson's last year. I just want all of you to know that. He won't be back after this season. And Jordan saying how he shouldn't have to be in that position where he has to stand at a microphone and talk about how much he wants Jackson back and that he won't be back. It is. It's crazy to think that was the direction, the most important decision made. That's where he decided to go. His loyalty to Jerry Krause over one of the greatest basketball teams ever ascended, one of the greatest dynasties in professional sports history, and I don't think that can be disputed. Yeah, you wonder, can they come back and make a, you know, if he decides that Krause is going to be the one who goes and Jackson does another short-term deal, do they win it again in 98-99? A question we'll never have the answers to, but man, it would have been fun trying to see, because they certainly, while they had shown some signs of slowing in that second three-peat, the fact that they were still the last one standing and won the trophy again for a third straight time.
It's just, it's mind-boggling. And yeah, then you see, like, what ramifications
that judgment.
Yes, exactly. And then it's a league where people pay attention. And so, you know, what could it have been like for Scottie Pippen, who is a top five player in the sport, to be the 122nd highest paid player who almost wins an MVP when Jordan retires for baseball the first time. And then they break up that team and they side with management over players and Michael Jordan and Phil Jackson and Scottie Pippen. Like, you don't want to just be thinking of the last 20 years of Bulls basketball while you're watching that, because you want to enjoy what that era of Bulls basketball was. But you talk about, like, how did the Bulls' reputation around the league become what it was? You were seeing a lot of it. Yeah. Like, if that's how they treated Phil Jackson and Scottie Pippen,
it's dysfunction at the highest levels of an organization, and it was chronic, it was toxic. And it is a tribute to all of them, whichever side you're on, it's a tribute to all of them that they managed to grind their way through as long as they did and collect all those championship trophies with so much contempt for each other. That's the difference between them and the Bears of the mid-'80s, mid to late 80s, which only got to one championship round, and they won it, but never got back. They had all kinds of dysfunction and contempt for management as well. But the Bulls managed to survive all that and, you know, etch their name into sports history as one of the greats ever. And
that's why, right? And that's why Phil Jackson, as a motivator, turned it into an us against them, the last dance on the pamphlet, allowed for Pippen to berate Krause on the bus because he agreed with him, because the real crux of the breakup was that Jerry Krause couldn't stand that Phil Jackson was getting all of the credit. I read something from Phil Rosenthal earlier today, and I thought it was put beautifully. Like, Jerry Krause deserved more credit than he got, but thought he deserved more credit than he probably actually deserved. And I butchered
think that's
the second
accurate.
Half of that.
Yeah, but I know. That's an accurate way of stating it. He did not get enough credit because he was always around asking for it. No one was more of a Jerry Krause fan than Jerry Krause. That much
it's a classic
is
Napoleon syndrome, right? Like the little guy who
is
clearly very smart and clearly did great things, trading Oakley for Cartwright, bringing in Kukoc, identifying Pippen, trading up for him, Horace Grant. Like, he is a GM who largely built one of the greatest dynasties in the history of sports, and he's not remembered favorably because of his personality and because of how it ended.
Yeah, and how he looked, too, unfortunately. That made me sad. Jordan Crumbs. Twice in the in episode number one, referencing him being short and fat. One of them he can control, one of them he can't. And it just that doesn't agree with me, talking to people you work with like that. I don't care where your level of disrespect is for them professionally. Don't treat people like that.
Yeah, it's obviously horrible.
I'd love to know what specifically was said. Nobody went that far. What exactly? Because Jackson put up with it. How bad did it go where he finally had to say something to Pippen to knock it off?
I don't know. We can ask Rusty LaRue at 5 o'clock today. What specifically was it? Was it weight based? Was it religion based? Was it monetary? Like what were the specific criticisms of Krause?
Yeah, I don't know if Rusty will tell us, but we could try to get it out of him. That's just man, that's horrible. But not a surprise. Surprising the head coach put up with it as long as he did. It's one thing for the athletes too, and I'm not condoning them. But they're still kids living in a kid's world. A member of your management team, your head coach, who's a much more mature guy and has way more life experience, should not have enabled that sort of behavior. That's not acceptable. God.
He agreed with it, and he felt it helped them perform by having a villain, right? They showed that clip of what's the biggest obstacle for you this year, and Jordan glances up to Krause's office like, that was Phil's motivation for that last season. So I think that's why he did it. Whether that's the moral thing to do or not, I think is pretty clear, like on an ethic level. But Jordan built a culture that was win at all cost. Right? It was win at all cost. If you have to be an a-hole to your boss, then so be it. And I think that permeated throughout the team. One quick thing on Jordan, and it wasn't in the documentary last night, but it was in Ramona Shelburne's article on ESPN about how the documentary came together that came out over the weekend. And I thought it spoke to just how maniacal Jordan is in all of this. He agrees to the footage, right? And the film crew in 97, 98, he negotiates the rights to, you can't use the footage until I say, just like you couldn't play with Michael Jordan in a video game or they couldn't use him in a commercial because he was always outside of the NBA marketing machine because he could do more and make more doing it for himself. So he negotiates that he has like final cut, last say on this footage. It doesn't see the light of day for 18 years. 2016, LeBron James has the crowning moment and achievement of his career, wins a championship in his hometown of Cleveland, his third. People say, what does LeBron have left to prove? He's now on that Mount Rushmore of greatness. And the conversation of him and Mike really intensifies. On the day of the Cavs championship parade, that's when Jordan greenlights the movie. That is a staggering detail of competitiveness all those years later.
Is that what it is, competitiveness? Or is it a disproportionate amount of insecurity from one of the most accomplished athletes in the history of the world?
Take it for whatever you want, but in terms of like a illustrative thing on how Michael Jordan, like what makes him tick, that detail of he agrees to the meeting, meets with the producer, learns of that guy's credits. Oh, you were behind the Allen Iverson doc? You were behind this? You were behind this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's do it. The day of the Cavs championship parade.
That was cold-blooded.
I just...
There'll be a time when I might need this.
Saves it for them. Like, that is Michael Jordan. And I thought it was so compelling last night. And Jordan was a main figure of it, but not at all the biggest. Like, if that's as a-holio as Jordan comes off, he'll be fine. Yeah. I'm guessing we're going to get a lot more of that behind-the-scenes stuff as it goes on. But we will be reviewing The Last Dance and comparing it to the modern era and telling our stories and hearing yours as we go throughout the day, including with Sam Smith at 3 o'clock, who was fantastic in the documentary and on the Scott Van Pelt Sports Center afterwards last night. Like, everyone was treating it like a live sporting event. There was Sam Smith, Jackie McMullen, J.A. Adonde, Scott Van Pelt. Like, it was like, oh, man, it's like I'm watching Monday Night Football, except it's a documentary about the 90s Bulls. But there is still a pandemic going on, and Mayor Lightfoot earlier today said many, many things have to happen before we're ready to open up Chicago again. So we'll tune in to Governor Pritzker coming up.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
On the score. Here's Governor J.B. Pritzker from WBBM.
On the Illinois Department of Public Health website at dph.illinois.gov, where it's updated daily. First, our hospitalization data. To remind you, this is a count of the number of COVID patients and assumed COVID patients in the hospital at any condition, whether mild or serious. So here's the time progression so that you can get a feel for the direction that things seem to be going. On April 6th, we had 3,680 patients. On April 10th, that number had risen to 4,020. On April 14th, that number had risen to 4,283. And as of April 19th, we had 4,599 Illinoisans in the hospital with COVID-19. That's a net increase of 316 from April 14th. For context, early modeling in mid-March showed that without social distancing, we would have exceeded our hospital capacity by more than 25,000 beds by April 6th. And to be clear, we are still seeing too many Illinoisans hospitalized with this virus. But because Illinoisans have come together by social distancing, learning at home, and staying at home, we've so far prevented our worst-case scenarios. As you can imagine, when fewer people are contracting COVID-19, not only are there fewer hospitalizations, but also fewer ICU beds and fewer ventilators needed. I'll offer the same time series progression to you for our COVID-occupied ICU beds as I did for overall hospitalization rates. On April 6th, COVID patients occupied 43% of our 2,700 ICU beds. On April 10th, that number was 40% of 2,900 ICU beds. Remember, our institutions have worked to expand their bed capacity, which is why our overall bed number keeps increasing. On April 14th, COVID patients occupied 40% of the nearly 3,000 ICU beds. And that brings us to today. Of the 4,599 Illinoisans in the hospital with COVID-19 right now, 1,239 of them are in the ICU, occupying 40% of our now 3,100 beds. Another critical metric to watch is the number of Illinoisans with COVID-19 who are on ventilators. Of the 4,599 Illinoisans in the hospital now, 757 are on ventilators. That means 23% of our total ventilator inventory is currently in use by COVID-19 patients, continuing a downward trend from 25% on April 14th, 27% on April 10th, and 29% on April 6th. And I'll add that 23% of our total ventilator supply is about 10 percentage points lower than it would have been had Illinois not acquired about 1,000 ventilators since March 23rd, when we had about 2,200 ventilators statewide. Today, we're up to 3,200 ventilators. And again, had we not established mitigation measures, by now we would have needed thousands more ventilators beyond our existing capacity. So real progress has been made. And while we never know the exact impacts of the efforts all of you have made to protect your communities, all the projections indicate that you have saved thousands of lives. But as you've seen, our case numbers and our hospitalizations are still rising, even if that rise is slower now. Our curve is bending the right way. With the current mitigation strategies in place, we may not have reached our peak yet, but your actions are helping to keep that peak as low as possible. Also today, I want to discuss the terrible toll that COVID-19 has taken on our seniors, specifically at long-term care facilities and nursing homes, and to review some of the steps that my administration has taken to monitor and protect our long-term care facilities and nursing homes around the state, a priority since the earliest days of our state's COVID-19 response. On February 28th, in my first public update dedicated specifically to the coronavirus, I highlighted that the data from other countries clearly showed that COVID-19 tends to cause more serious illness in elderly populations. And on March 4th, 5 days before we initiated our disaster proclamation, we established guidelines to maximize preparations at our nursing homes, veterans homes, and long-term care facilities. Long before the first nursing home case appeared in Illinois, the state implemented strict measures around restricting visitors at the long-term care facilities that we operate, such as the veterans homes and DHS facilities. And we collaborated with industry associations to have the facilities that we regulate implement similar strict guidelines. We also instructed local, county, and city health departments on best practices and protocols for PPE usage, heightened hygiene practices, contact tracing, and family notification. And we have provided that training continuously since then. The week of our disaster proclamation, we began regular communication with all of our long-term care facilities, their governing organizations, and local health departments to provide educational instruction and answer questions. Between our educational webinars and regular calls, formal communication among these organizations and IDPH now takes place 4 days a week, with additional one-on-one discussions happening around the clock to troubleshoot issues as they may arise. On Saturday, March 14th, the first nursing home case was announced at a private facility in DuPage County. The Illinois Department of Public Health immediately sent a team of infectious disease experts to ensure proper protocols were being followed and ensure that communications procedures with residents, family members, and staff were implemented internally. When there's an outbreak at a long-term care facility, there's so much to do all at once, and the expertise doesn't always exist on the ground at these homes every day. So IDPH began to see that the most effective way to respond to an outbreak was to have a strike team of experts and advisors immediately make people and resources from the department available to double and triple check that training and guidelines were being followed. These experts have been deployed to a number of facilities since that time. The strike teams deployed have more recently evolved to include infectious disease control experts from the University of Illinois at Chicago and volunteers from Project Hope. IDPH also regularly consults with local county and city health departments, who can then be deployed to facilities in their regions as well. The best-funded and largest local public health departments, like the Chicago DPH, often deploy their own strike teams and ask IDPH to stand down. Beyond a lockdown, experts and guidance, another extremely important component of limiting infections at these facilities is PPE. A single confirmed case in a facility activates our guidance that all staff in the facility should wear formal PPE and all residents should wear masks. IEMA provides these supplies from our state inventory to local health departments to provide long-term care facilities with all necessary PPE beyond what they may stock and procure on their own. The state has now provided PPE to all 102 counties and made clear to local health departments that when it comes to distribution, the long-term care facilities are priority recipients alongside healthcare workers and first responders. Long-term care facilities that run low on PPE contact their local health department who provide it, and they in turn can get replenished by the state. As you know, we are continually scouring the global PPE supply chain and making acquisitions so that we can fulfill these requests as quickly as possible. I also want to talk about COVID-19 testing at long-term care facilities. First, it's important to note that once a nursing home has a confirmed case, we treat any additional symptomatic residents or staff as if they are a confirmed case. Formal testing has had nothing to do with whether a nursing home resident suspected to have COVID-19 can receive care for COVID-19. As for staff, long-term care facility workers are considered healthcare workers, which means they've long been able to access testing at our drive-through sites and other hospital locations that prioritized healthcare workers and first responders. As swabs and VTM availability increases in our state, we're now able to more aggressively deploy testing at our long-term facilities. We're implementing a two-pronged approach to this work. First, let's discuss facilities without known COVID-19 outbreaks. We're working to test all residents and all staff at those homes. We're prioritizing testing at long-term care facilities that are home to our populations where a COVID infection is more likely to lead to higher severity cases, especially among Black and Brown communities. This testing at non-COVID facilities will allow us to identify early the presence of COVID-19 in a facility and isolate those cases before widespread transmission. With support from the Illinois National Guard and the Illinois Department of Transportation, our teams delivered tests to our first two homes over the weekend, and will do the same for an additional 10 facilities today, with more to come. Second, in facilities with known COVID-19 cases, we continue to operate under the assumption that a resident displaying symptoms of COVID-19 has COVID-19 and should be isolated accordingly and receive the appropriate care. One change, however, is that we've altered our protocol related to staff. Where in prior weeks we've advised that staff be given pre-shift wellness checks, including taking temperatures, we will now be ramping up testing on all staff who work at these facilities, all staff, allowing us to determine who is coming in and out of an infected home, possibly asymptomatic, and should instead be at home in isolation.
That's Governor J.B. Pritzker, courtesy of WBBM. 1,151 new cases across the state of Illinois, with 59 additional deaths as the numbers continue to grow, but the rate continues to decrease, as hopefully an indication, as we know that these numbers trail by about 2 weeks, that Illinois continues to bend the curve and that we are on our way down. Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot earlier today on the issue of testing said, "We are definitely better than we were before, but we're nowhere near where we need to be. We really need to have widespread testing in every neighborhood. We need a significant increase in capacity before we can even think about reopening our city." 500 deaths among city residents, 60% African-American, with 12,571 lab-confirmed coronavirus cases within the city of Chicago. Sam Smith with Bulls stories and documentary reaction at 3. Some of your feedback to the documentary coming up on The Score.
Y'all know about killing?
Well, I'd like to hear about it, potheads.
Is this one bit so to escape from reality?
Me, I don't need this. I am reality.
Yep. Sergeant Barnes didn't need any artificial enhancement. He is reality. Happy 420 to all of you who do, from the McNeil and Parkin Show, right here on The Score.
Amen. Progress. First 420 with illegal in the state of Illinois.
Feels, oh, that's right. It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
They have specials going on today, by any chance?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Maybe only bang people 28% on their taxes,
right,
instead of 33. Isn't that what it is? It's about a 33% upcharge just for your tax, right? I think that's what it is.
Yeah, it's like a fun tax, like an ATM at a casino or cigarettes or anything like that. So, yeah, it's but hey, that's okay.
Yeah.
Tax it, regulate it, make some money off of it, and most importantly, decriminalize it.
Yes, don't staple that to somebody's job application for the rest of their life. Come on now.
Well, because there was the story with the NFL draft on Thursday that, it's considered a very deep tackle draft and a very deep receiver draft. And the kid from Louisville, Mechtin's his last name, who's like a house of a man, like 6'7", something like that. He apparently had his weed test flagged at the combine. But I was thinking, like, why is that even news with the new marijuana rules in the NFL where he doesn't get suspended? Like, he'll be entered into the quote-unquote program where he will get an extra test, but the more he tests positive, the more he just gets fined, which is also still ridiculous. But there's no reason now, not that there ever was, but to let a guy fall in the draft because of marijuana in the NFL. Like, you don't have to stop him from playing. Why would it affect his draft stock?
Yeah, even less than an era gone by. You're right about that. I would love to see the language that ultimately was approved when they ratified this CBA, where they settled. Because we were at Scorehouse debating that, is this progress? We were asking about this new, where you don't get suspended, but you just don't get paid. So essentially, you want to get high, feel free to get high. We're not going to pay you. That's the short end of it. There were a little bit, few more hoops to jump through if you were caught, I think, a third time. Look, the kid was dumb for testing hot at the combine. You know you've got to pee when you're there. But the fact they're still testing for this sort of thing makes me shake my head in disgust. Come on, man. It's 2020. If you have probable cause on a guy, if a guy's consistently late for meetings or whatever, if he stinks like weed when you're at practice, that's one thing. But to just be testing guys when they show up for their physicals, I don't get it. I don't get it.
Yeah, in basically any line of work. Not all, but the vast majority. You should not be tested for recreational drugs.
Yes,
certainly.
If you're piloting
not
something public transportation wise, be it an aircraft, a boat, a bus.
Yeah, you got to carry
like
a gun for your job.
Yes, yeah. Emergency medical people, the important jobs.
420.
There's a man who never celebrated 420 other than by saying it in such happy fashion right there.
I'm still waiting for Les's story about how he got a flight home right after Jordan's final shot against Utah. Do you think that's like the big reveal of episode 9 or 10 of The Last Dance?
I did not see Grabstein's mug in the first two episodes. Did you?
I did not. I saw Marcin Greco. Marcin Greco in France, right behind Jordan with the beret, and then, of course, Terry Bors with the mustard yellow. And
Boy. Yeah, that was Bors in 84 when the Bulls had just drafted Jordan. That was vintage Tubby Terry when he was chubby and smoky and stinky and, Yeah, that was before he found fitness, 12-step work, basically, is what he did. He became a born again when it came to fitness. But I saw Paul Ledewski. You got Rick Tellender. Who else? I think I saw George Hoffman there. I saw the score 1160 flag well represented against Utah.
Held by Dan Bernstein.
Yes. I think I saw his microphone stick extension as well. There was one mic that was in a hand, and Bernstein had a special tool where he didn't have to get as close. He had about a 6-foot extension for his mic. He would tie his microphone up to a stick.
That was for the players and everyone else's benefit. not so much Dan.
He was social distancing before it became fashionable.
You could discover convenient ways to pay your ComEd bill online at ComEd.com/pay. And the bottom of the hour on the score was brought to you by Northwestern Athletics. The Wildcats would like to thank all of those working throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, including postal workers, CTA staff, and airport staff. We appreciate you. Someone who you see behind the scenes and interviewed on camera throughout this documentary. He's a Bulls historian. He wrote the definitive book on Michael Jordan, The Jordan Rules. Sam Smith offers his perspective on the beginning of The Last Dance next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.